Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. So excited about today's podcast. Got to meet a great author. His name is Tony Delaney, and he writes the most delightful children's books. They really, really get to the heart that financial planning and financial literacy can be very intimidating. And he wants to start early and start with the youngins. And I love it. He started with adult books, and he started with this book called Owning the Dash. It uses personal fitness, so cool, as an example for financial fitness, like personal fitness, comparing it to financial fitness. And so kind of put things in a pretty straightforward way, even though I'm not explaining this very well, but it was very well put. See, he writes, I can't speak. How about that? And it just walks people through a plan that gives them tools. I love tools. And, you know, it really gets you the starting point. And I guess that's the most important thing. My husband and I have been going through so much lately with our finances. This has never been my strong suit. And I'm just going to tell you right now that it's embarrassing to admit this, because I have so many degrees. I consider myself a very, very intelligent woman. I really put it out there, you know, and numbers are my thing, but money makes me want to throw up half the time. And growing up without it, you know, people have all kinds of emotions tied to money. And a lot of really good authors and speakers talk about this and will really connect you to your feelings about money. So Mark and I have been going through a lot lately and trying to come up with a budget. Hello, we've been married 10 years. You think we would have done this by now, but come up with a budget together. Our plan in the beginning was we didn't have one. Honestly, if you read my book, you know that Mark kind of stepped into the middle of hell. Elizabeth was in such a bad way when we met, and when Mark and I fell in love, I don't even know if you could call it love, because I was so numb. I was kind of like a hamster on a hamster wheel at the time. And that first year that we were together, we were kind of rushing to the finish line to get married. And we married 3 weeks before Elizabeth died, because we wanted her there. So it was a whirlwind, really. Of course, there was so much love there. There was so much, there were so many feelings there. There was just so much foundation there. But there was no time for budgets. And, you know, I was not only like married 3 weeks before Elizabeth died, but I was also in bankruptcy court like the week before Elizabeth died. So there was a mixed bag of crap going on in my life. And Mark and I could not combine our finances because of that. So we had a lot of stuff going on with money at that time. And I couldn't handle a lot. Mark took over paying the bills. I was running the business, which turned into businesses. And he took over all of the personal finances, and literally we crawled out of the mud. It took years. And I'm so proud. I tear up when I think about how hard we worked, how hard that man worked, how hard we worked together as a family, all of us. And we're doing great, but it's been a journey. And this is our 10-year wedding anniversary this year, and it's our 10-year anniversary of losing Elizabeth. So I love this podcast, because finances and money are such an important topic for a family. It's really, you know, it's the number one cause for divorce, right? Money is that tough. And so owning the dash started it all, this book, and you need tools and you need a place to start. And, you know, Mark and I are finally, after 10 years, coming together and starting to be able to plan together instead of separating out like, okay, Annie, you do this piece and Mark, you do this piece. And we were getting it done, but separately. And finally, we're able to come together. It is not easy. It's hard stuff. So then at some point after Tony wrote Owning the Dash, he became passionate about writing books for children. And he pivoted. And he pivoted to family education and family financial fitness. And that's when he started to do some really cool stuff. And he wrote Dash and Nikki and the Jelly Bean Game. And then Lily and May Learn Why Mom and Dad Work. So cool. And Rohan and Naira. I might have said that wrong. Sorry. And Big Sister's Bet. And then the list goes on. And his books are just really great. And they're little lessons, but they're also just really sweet. And, you know, one little thing that he does in there is there are, you'll notice maybe that there are kids in there who are disabled, but the disability has nothing to do with the story. They're just represented as part of our community. And I love that. It's really cool. So, Tony, thank you. You are awesome, man. I loved interviewing you. I loved this podcast. I think our audience is going to love you as well. So we will have all of the connections to Tony's books and how to find him in our show notes. And have a blast listening to this podcast. And please go check out Tony's books. Here we go. And I'm here today with Tony Delaney. And this is going to be a really fun podcast today. I've been looking forward to it because Tony is an author and a financial advisor, financial planner. You know, we have a lot of different names for financial folks, and they go by many different specialties and many different titles. And we'll talk about that today too. But mostly I really want to talk to him about his role as author because I'm so infatuated with the series of books that he's been doing. So welcome to the show, Tony. Thank you for coming.
Thanks so much for having me, Annette. It's wonderful to be here.
So really, Tony started with this book called Owning the Dash. That was the book that started it all. And it uses, I'm fascinated by this, personal fitness as an example for financial fitness. What a great metaphor that is. And, you know, it was pretty straightforward in the way that it kind of walks people through their plan, uses a lot of great tools. I mean, you know, I thought I'm a planner. I have never met a checklist that I don't love. You know, it gives me a lot of comforts, like wrapping yourself in this nice cozy blanket. And so I like tools and I love a simpleton. So I just kind of love the way you're walking people through it and giving them the things that they need to get started. Great, great book, great first book. And then you talk, you know, you did a book about retirement planning and, you know, you're kind of like marching along. I don't want to say, you know, in a generic way, it's not that at all. But at some point you became passionate about writing books for kids and pivoting into this family education space and family financial fitness. And I'm just like, you know, really excited to talk to you about that. And when did that come about and how did that happen? So sure. Talk to me about that.
So I'll just warn all of your listeners that a little background on myself. They have in high school superlatives, most likely to be this, most likely to do that. I don't know how this was allowed, but in my high school, I was voted among my peers as the most worrisome person in our school. So that should just kind of give a little sense of background, which for what I do for a living, being a financial planner, works out really, really well, because if you're worried about it, chances are I've been worrying about it too.
Yeah.
But the simple kind of that backstory is that I've been a financial planner for the past 20 years. And as you're saying in the beginning, there are lots of people, there are lots of different types of financial advisors. Somebody could be an investment advisor. Somebody could be an insurance agent. Somebody could be a mortgage broker. There's just all sorts of different worlds in the financial world. And the way I would view myself is I'm more of the full comprehensive planner. I'm kind of in the center spoke in a wheel, trying to connect all those different pieces together. Or a better analogy I'd like to use is if you have a puzzle box, I take that giant puzzle of your financial life and bring it all together. And I started as a planner in my 20s and right out of college. And throughout my career, I got married, bought a home, have two kids. I have a daughter now who's 13, Abby, and my son Jason is 11. And I just realized going over these years that life is complicated enough, but when you throw the family dynamic into it, it gets a whole lot, it gets even more complicated in a great way. So I found I had a passion for helping families just because I could relate. I've gone through a lot of those scenarios. And to your comment on the original book, in 2015, I had a cousin, his name was Greg Plitt. Greg was really famous in the fitness world. He was on the cover of about 250 plus fitness magazines. And he unfortunately was in an accident and passed away. And while he was alive, he did videos on people would email in questions on life and fitness. And this was before social media was really quite as popular as it is today. But he would put together videos where he would answer those questions. And one of the questions was actually on death. And the idea, he talked about the idea of owning the dash. And owning the dash basically refers to on a tombstone between your birth and death dates, you have that dash in between. So right. The idea of taking ownership of your life and really just trying to make the best of all the years that you do have while you're here. So that really hit me. And to your point on the passion, I've always loved helping families as a planner. But a side desire I've always had was to write a book. And I realized watching his videos on life and fitness that a lot of his fitness philosophies could also apply to finance. Mm-hmm. So, and for the younger generation, fitness is something that a lot of individuals can understand. They can understand why it's important to take care of your body, to eat right, to get a proper sleep or whatever it might be, even though we don't always do it. We know why it's important. So to kind of take something that younger individuals could relate to and bring it into the world of finance, it just made it just a non-intimidating type thing, and just something that was here to say, here to help, and here to kind of give that that checklist or that stepping stone on how to get started.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was writing that original book, my daughter, Abby, she doesn't sleep at night. I don't know if any other parents with teenagers have kids that never go to sleep. So yeah. I would be writing in a home office, and at 10:30 at night, I'd hear, "Hi, Daddy." And the gist of it is she started writing next to me. And as we were writing next to each other, we came up with the idea of writing a children's picture book. And that taught a basic financial lesson. And Dash and Nikki and the Jelly Bean Game came to life. And that book basically teaches about compassion and patience and delayed gratification. It uses something. Have you ever heard of the marshmallow study from years back?
No, tell us about that.
So yes, the marshmallow study is a study that was done years ago where they put children in a room and they said, "I'm going to give you a marshmallow and I'm going to leave. And if the marshmallow is still there when I come back, I'll give you another marshmallow." And they studied to see which children would be able to resist the temptation of the marshmallow versus eat it as soon as the person walked out of the room. I applied that study to jelly beans, where two kids wake up in the morning that happen to look just like my children. They wake up and they're invited. They find a note that invites them to play a game where they each get 10 jelly beans to start off the day. And for every hour that they can resist, they get 5 more. And one of the children is a bit, he likes to win. He likes games. So he immediately is, you know, planning to win and doesn't touch the jelly beans. But I've already kind of given away which one it is. But the sister is a little bit more impulsive and eats her jelly beans right away. And the sister gets to see, as the day goes on, his jelly bean pile building up while her plate's empty. There are no jelly beans. And there's a fun twist at the end of the story where he helps her out and they both benefit. But the whole idea is just, it's a fun way of kind of getting that conversation started. I found working with families that one of the biggest questions that gets brought up is, how do I start talking to my kids about this? When our generation grew up, our parents didn't talk about money matters. And it seems that there's a lot more complexity these days than there was 20, 30 years ago. So I found that storytelling is probably one of the best ways to kind of get that conversation going. And instead of, I've also learned, I'm sure married parents can agree, that telling your kids what to do doesn't always work the way we hope it would. So if we can have a story that we can talk about and relate to the characters, it helps to really get that conversation started. That's probably a little bit more than you needed for that beginning.
No, that's amazing. So it wasn't your idea. It was your daughter's idea, and she was the pivot, not you.
Both Abby and Jason have played major roles in the creation of all of the books. We've released two. We have a third one coming out in March, and we'll have actually two more coming out later this year. And they have helped me to edit the books so that, as they have described it, kids will want to read them. They've been very, very wonderful, making sure that I'm not using lingo that doesn't make sense. Right. It's a lot of fun.
So tell me about the second book, Lily and May Learn Why Mom and Dad Work. Yay! Like, we really need our kids to understand this. It's a lesson about budgeting, but also very simple lesson about, you know, where do we go and why are we, you know, working? What is this thing called FICA? No, just kidding.
No. I mean, each story has a little personal connection. And when I was, when Abby and Jason were 2 and 4, we have an old video of them where I was heading off to work and my wife took a video of, as the door closed and I walked away, my daughter was prying her eyes out, saying, why can't you guys stay home? Why can't you play with us? Why do you have to go? And that story, that video is always just stuck in the back of my mind, because it's important for kids to understand why parents work, especially since most households are now dual income households. Right. Having basically what the story does is the two girls have the same scenario. There's Lily and May, and They see a parent go off to work, and the dad goes off to work, but mom's also prepping to go to work as well. And the girls are upset. They don't understand why the parents have to go. And so she takes them to the table and basically brings out a budget book. And to your point, the word budget is almost taboo sometimes when it comes to families. It's a scary word. It's a word that we don't even get introduced to until much later in life. And a lot of times we don't feel comfortable sharing what we spend on different things. And not to say that parents need to share everything they spend down to the wire on all the different expenses, but when we can start having conversations where kids can look and see that, okay, if we're sitting at a dinner table, as an example, and say, what are some of the things that we spend money on? Turn it into a game, turn it into something fun where we can see, are there the things that we spend money on, like furniture or food or clothing, the services that we receive, like teachers or police or doctors or whatever it might be. And then finally, a unique concept that I threw into the book, which I've received some comments on, is taxes. why do we pay taxes? And what are the what does the tax money really go to? The police officer, the fireman, the different services that we use. So the whole idea is, once again, just to kind of get a conversation started with kids on different things and have them participate. Maybe after they read the book, go through and discuss, oh, these are some other things that could fit into this category, or these are some other things we pay for.
Well, you are starting to step out with each book into a little bit more dangerous territory, right? Because your third book, which is coming out soon, is talking about betting and gambling.
Yes.
So that, you know, you're sticking your toe out a little further there. It's Rowan and Naira and Big Sister's Bet. Do I have that right?
That you do, yes.
Okay. So what made you decide to talk a little bit about risk taking and gambling?
So, yes, and it's been hard because the idea of introducing the idea of gambling to children at a young age, it's something that I was questioning whether it made sense to introduce at such a young age or not. And I think that sometimes we're hesitant to talk to our children about things because we're afraid that they won't be able to understand it or comprehend or whatever it might be. But the reality is that kids understand things a lot better, and it's better for us to talk about those critical questions like drugs or things like that as parents versus having, I mean, school systems are great to do that as well, but versus finding out elsewhere. So gambling is at some point going to be introduced at some point in their lives. And the sooner they can start to have a connection to, okay, I recognize this scenario. I recognize how I felt in this scenario. I can recognize that if I keep doing this, if I keep gambling, I'm going to feel the same way. So to give the listeners a bit of a sense, what happens in the book is a brother's older sister comes home for the day, and she has a present waiting for him. She has a football. And she says, do you want to go back in the backyard and play? And they do. And so they start throwing the ball back and forth, and she says, I'll make a bet with you. And she said, for every catch that we make, I'll give you $1. And you get to decide when we stop. But if at any point during the game the football drops, then you lose all the money. So the control is completely in the younger brother's hands. But and they start playing, and they get up to $5, then $10, and then $15. And as they're going higher and higher, the older sister is saying, are you sure you want to keep going? Trying to give little brother a chance to pause and think about it. And I read this aloud to a group of children, and they knew what was coming even before I said it. Rohan, the little brother, was asked, you know, do you want to go one more time? And he thought and thought, and he's thinking about all the great things he could buy with all the money. More than what his original target was. He had something in mind that he wanted to get initially, and then it became bigger and bigger, which gambling can sometimes do to us, or often do to us. And so he said, just one more. And that one more happened to be the fumble. And as he fumbled the ball, he's pausing and quiet, and he's looking at the ball. He's not angry at his sister. He's thinking to himself, I made this decision. This is something that I had the choice to stop at any point, and I chose not to stop.
Oh, so, interesting.
So when kids see that and they kind of reflect on what's coming, it really kind of gives them something to think about when a real gambling scenario happens in their life, when they're forced. And gambling, yes, gambling, going to a casino or something like that is one form of gambling. But I would say also in the investing world.
Sure.
We've seen a lot of people get excited over hot topic items, fads. Mm-hmm. I won't discuss any particular types of investments, but there's one. It's been one. I'll share cryptocurrencies as an example. Mm-hmm. It's been something that was very popular in 2020. Everybody was going to become a millionaire, and then in the past year and a half, it's taken a very big hit, and a lot of people made a gamble. That they didn't fully understand what kind of volatility or risk was associated. So not trying to say any negative or positive about that world, but It is important that when it comes to investing and just life in general, having an understanding of these basic concepts, a budget with Lily and May, delayed gratification with Dash and Nikki, or in Rohan and Naira's case, patience and greed, and really paying attention to your emotions, seeing if you are making an emotional decision with what you're doing, or are you making a kind of calm and relaxed decision when it comes to something. So,
wow. Okay, so what's the fourth book going to be about?
So this one's a surprise. We've only had little hints and whatnot, but the fourth book is coming out in July. It is called Michael and Hannah and the Magic Money Tree. Ooh. And I don't know if you've ever heard of people say money should grow on trees, or I wish money grew on trees. I remember growing up constantly saying to my parents, why don't you just print more money? Why doesn't the government just print more money? And I will say that one thing I've really tried with all these books to do is keep politics out of it, keep it very neutral and just focused on the kids and the education. But in the story of Michael and Hannah and the Magic Money Tree, there's a fair in town, and all of the kids, there's a special tent at the fair where there's a money tree in the tent. And a group of 8 children per day are allowed to go into the tent and basically get access to the money tree, get as much money as they want to buy whatever they want. So they go to this tree. What we're going to find out, this is a really big sneak peek. Your audience is the first to know. All of the kids in all of the books. So if you take a look at the website, owningthedash.com, which is where all the books are listed, you'll be able to see this newest book as well. But every book involves a different family. And I wanted to, I'll explain why that is in a minute. But what we're going to find out in Michael and Hannah is that all the families live in the same neighborhood. And so all the characters from all the old books are going to be in this fourth book that's coming out, and they're all going to be participating in this game.
Nice.
But what?
All right, you heard it here first.
yes, definitely. The cat's out of the bag. So I hope everybody's very excited about it. And I'm super excited because it's so neat to see all these characters start to interact. And I will say that my daughter has already come up with stories of what they're going to be like in their teenage years plus. She's got all the drama coming for down the road. So we'll see how that works out. I'm going to stick with the financial stuff for now.
Fantastic. I was wondering when you were going to start throwing in some social justice issues with money, because I knew that was coming, you know?
Well, I think, just as I said, it's really important for kids to at least understand why things work, how things work. And even with the first book, with Dash and Nikki and the Jelly Bean Game, I didn't give the trick to it, but there's an important part of charity as it comes to money and taking care of each other and being a community and looking out for each other. In the book, what we'll find out is that Dash sees that his sister is struggling, and she made it, you know, she's not in as good a position that he is. And so he decides to try to help her out. He uses compassion later in the book. And in Rohan and Naira, there's definitely a big lesson that's been brought up there, but Naira didn't make fun of her brother or criticize him or preach at him or anything like that. She basically was there to support him and say, she actually says, Dad played this game with me when I was younger as well, and I remember how it impacted me. So yes, a lot of these books are certainly about learning these fundamentals of finance, and some of them don't even involve finance. I mean, to an extent they do, but the last one that's coming out, I mentioned that there are 3 books coming out this year. The last one, actually, the first official draft just got completed just recently. It's hopefully going to be out in December, and it is called Akash and Myla and the Big Jump. And the book, I won't give all the details of it, but the book involves probably the most significant part of financial planning in my 20 years as an advisor, and it's judgment. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are afraid to ask for help or to approach or even look at their situation because they're afraid others are going to judge them or that they're going to judge themselves.
Yeah.
And with, I've written two adult self-help books. The first one was the Owning the Dash book. The second one was the No Regrets Retirement Roadmap.
Yeah.
The first one was for the younger audience. The second one is for the kind of those preparing for their transition into retirement or just recently retired, trying to help make sure that money lasts a lifetime. But with both books, the initial chapters are almost exclusively on judgment. And it sounds a little silly to kind of judgment's not really money related, but in many ways it is because it's emotion. It is you holding yourself back from doing, achieving those dreams or working towards those dreams. And in a terrible way, we sometimes even judge each other. We're afraid that if we judge others, they're going to feel the same way about us. Whereas if we go in with more of an open heart and an open mind, then life somehow works out a whole lot better in that environment. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, it's I'm throwing the kitchen sink at you right now.
No, well, everything I've asked you to do. So totally feeling everything you're putting down right now. I want to come full circle. So first of all, how do you have time for all your clients? Because, you know, I've written a book. I'm trying to finish my second one right now. I have an idea for the third one that I want. I just don't know how you get all this done. It's really a lot to just run a practice, have a family, and, you know, to be an author and do all this other stuff. Getting a book out, getting books published. Are you self-published? Do you work with a publisher? Do you do a hybrid? I mean, I do work on a hybrid model. Yeah. So I have an editor and, you know, I work with a publisher, but it's a hybrid model. So that's what you're doing too. You own all the rights to your books, but you have them professionally published.
Yes.
Yes.
And I've been asked that question a lot, especially over the past several years as the world has been unique with everything we've gone through. And what I'll share is that the books are, the first book, the original Owning the Dash book, was an immense passion. They all are, but that one, I lost my cousin, who was basically like an older brother to me. And that I was very driven personally to sort of have that book serve as a testimonial to him. As well as just to help. The books are my way of giving back and trying to just do anything I can. The books are really intended for parents, but they're also intended for teachers and librarians and just to try to give in any way I possibly can. I've always had a passion for helping children and especially sick children. I work very closely with Duke Hospital, Duke Children's Hospital, and just a variety of others. But the simple answer is that we all have our things that when we get home and there's all sorts of stuff running through our head from the chaos of the world, the books are my release. They are what I go to when everybody goes to sleep. I, like my daughter, don't tend to fall asleep as early as everybody else does. And instead of, say, watching the game or something like that, writing these books just brings me great joy because I've seen since they've been released and even prior, just the excitement that kids have around them and parents for that matter. So it's a lot of fun. Writing the adult books was difficult. I won't lie, especially the No Regrets Retirement Roadmap. With everything going on with COVID, I had to rewrite the book because everything kind of got put on hold for a period of time and I had to rewrite for the new scenarios. But it was with the introduction of the first one, I've had a lot of individuals saying that's great for younger individuals, but what about us looking to make the transition?
Right,
so,
right.
But yes, the kids book, it's a family project too. My kids are very involved in the process. They are even trying to write their own short stories now. So it's nice to have that bond that we get to share. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is starting to take over more and more time as the books are getting out there. But I love it. So it's
we'll a see. Passion I'm not project, my day job, but it's turned into a real business for you. Definitely.
Yes.
And I love that you're modeling such good things for your kids. That's amazing. And I understand completely because I wrote my book after my daughter passed. Same thing. So I totally get that. So I want to just come full circle and talk again about, as you know, this is a podcast for people with disabilities, their families, the parents who are raising kids with disabilities, even adult kids with disabilities, and siblings and caregivers, and same. So coming full circle to you as that financial planner, financial advisor, I just want to get back to the financial literacy, financial planning end of things. And don't want to leave here without talking about those really good tools and tips that you have in that first book, you know, and to, you know, the lessons are great for kids. And it's so important that families start early and start talking about things. So I want to do two things. I want to do, you know, two or three really important things that parents should start talking to their kids about, but also what are those two or three really important things that parents or families should start doing for themselves? Because it is so hard to take that first step. And that was exactly what you did in your first book. You just want people to get started. And I just love that. So why don't we take the parents and the adult stuff first? And let's talk about, okay, how do we get people to get started? They just got to pick this up and get going. And that is really and truly the hardest part, is to just get moving on this.
Absolutely. So I'm glad you broke it into two different segments, because we have the parent side of things and we have the mm-hmm. kid side of things. And with the parent side of things, as I said, the biggest thing that prevents people from doing things is judgment, is the fear that they are going to be ridiculed. And a lot of times we have these things floating around in the back of our head that I can't do this. I'll do this after this point. I'll try this at this point. And what I would share is that, going back to the idea of having a puzzle box and dumping it all out, if you feel like your life is a puzzle right now and you have pieces all over the place that you don't know kind of what the scenario is, one of the things I incorporate into that book is that there's a reason professionals do exist. There's a reason professionals exist in all sorts of different areas. And there are ways to identify the good and the bad. Unfortunately, in the news and the media, we hear the bad. We'll hear the one bad advisor of the 100 that are good. But another word that I focus very heavily on when it comes to planning is flexibility, especially with the family dynamic. Things are not, life is always changing. It's always evolving. We're moving, we're, you know, another child, whatever it might be, school related things. So if you can build a plan with someone that can incorporate that flexibility, where you don't feel like you're tied into this strategy or tied into that strategy, that's kind of what Owning the Dash really does. It talks about the not only having the motivation to at least get the framework together. What do I need to do to be on track? And even more importantly than being on track for retirement or the future goals, what are the what ifs that we need to make sure are addressed now? Because if we don't address them, it doesn't matter how well we plan for the future. And with those what ifs, I'm talking about things like estate planning. It is, in all the years I've been an advisor, it's the number one thing that gets put on the back burner because it's awkward.
As an estate planner, I can tell you, people have a lot of reasons for not getting that done. You know, they don't think they have enough money to plan. They're afraid because they don't understand it. You know, it's overwhelming. All the same reasons they don't do their financial plan.
Right. And I would say the estate planning is as or more, well, they're all important. I don't want to say one's more or less important than the other, but a lot of people think of estate planning, as you said, as it's a money type thing, or it's a wealth type thing. But estate planning is as much about during the living years as it is about during the years of death, where you have things like powers of attorney, advanced directives, just things that say, here's what I want to have happen if something happens. And if anyone has ever been the executor of an estate, they know it's terrifying. One of the hardships, this is public knowledge, but with my cousin Greg, one of the big reasons I wrote that book is he was very disciplined. He was an incredible business owner and just person in general, but he didn't have an estate plan. We and there's, you know, it was difficult for his family to try to figure all of that out. Yeah. So just kind of taking that initial step and asking for guidance, that when you have someone that can say, here are those, that checklist of what you need to do, it makes life so much easier. It's so much calmer. You can at least make an informed decision on, yes, I want to do that, or no, I don't. Is there a life insurance need or a disability need to protect not only yourself? A lot of one question I always love asking couples is if we're meeting for the first time, do you know how much life insurance your spouse has? The answer is that usually we know how much life insurance we have, but we don't know how much our spouse has. And the reality is that that's what you're more dependent on, is what your partner has or your spouse has versus what you have on yourself. So kind of just, you know, bringing everything out in the open and having an informed decision where everybody's part of the conversation. That's another important thing I would share, is that especially with families and with couples, maybe there's one person that cares more about the financial side than the other, and that's fine. We all opposites attract, but it's really important that at least for those initial conversations, both of you play a very big role in building that plan together and stating what your goals are and what your desires are. So I would say that the biggest thing I would say to parents is take that first step, meet a few individuals, and just mark down, what are those what ifs? What are those goals for the future? And if you're not sure if you're on track, there is guidance. There are incredible tools out there that can help you figure that out. And then going to the point of special needs and so forth, there are incredible products that are out there and very important things that you can do as part of estate planning, which I know you could share far better than I can, but that when you've done it, you don't have to worry about it anymore. For me, I was in a car accident in 2013, and the back half of my car was completely smashed in. My kids' car seats were up in the roof of the car. Thank goodness I was the only one in the car.
Oh my God.
Yes, I can remember looking at that, the vision of looking back and seeing their seats like that. Just, well, anyway, I don't want to get too emotional with all this, but as I was sitting in the car, fortunately, the car was very well built and I was just a bit bruised up, but was able to walk away from the car. But all I was thinking during that moment was, had it been worse, the estate planning was done and the life protection was there. My family was going to be okay, at least financially. Emotionally, obviously not, but yeah. I'd address those two dues. And it's not something you have to do every year. It's something maybe you do every 7 to 10 years.
Right.
So that's the big thing I would share with the parents, is don't worry about being judged. If you walk in and you meet with somebody and you feel like they're judging you, just walk out. If a professional is good at their job, they're there to help. And if they've been doing it for long enough, they care as much about you as you do about this scenario. And there are a lot of good people out there. And in one of the chapters in Owning the Dash, actually in both books, I kind of mention a few things that are important to look for when actually looking, if you do want to hire a financial planner.
So that's good. I'm going to just summarize what you said so that I can remember it. You said, find the right person. Watch out for judgment. Make sure they're not judging you, but also don't judge yourself.
Absolutely.
And set some goals. Share information between you and your partner. Mm-hmm. I heard that loud and clear. Get on the same page. And there are good tools out there. So those are the 5 things that I heard. Am I missing anything?
No, I think that if there's one last piece, it's just like, you know, saying, I'm going to start the diet tomorrow, or I'm going to do this tomorrow. We can come up. I used to say, I actually have a line in Owning the Dash that says, the words family and tomorrow are two of the most inspiring words out there. Now, here's what I want to do for my family. Here's what I'm going to do tomorrow, my dreams for the future. Yeah. But they are also two of the best excuses in the world. I can't because of all my family commitments. I'll just deal with that tomorrow.
Right.
The hardest part, and especially with the estate planning, is just taking that initial step.
Yeah.
Meet with someone, have that consultation, and things start to flow from that point forward. So if you can get over that initial hump of just saying, whatever excuse you're coming up with, just say, you know what, this is important. We need to address it. I need to address it. I've never had someone say, I wish I didn't do that after working towards their goals or at least getting an assessment done. Yes, I think that the biggest thing is just be mindful of your own self-judgment, but also your own self-talk, which is kind of what a lot of these books are about as well. The idea of self-talking, how are the children talking to themselves? What's going through their heads?
Yes.
And that was not an intended segue to the kids' books, but
but it is. So now we have kids who are going to range from different ages and different capabilities, and so different processing skills. How do we start talking to kids about money? What's the first step?
So I think there's an even bigger step that I mentioned to you, that each book has a different family, and there was a reason for that. So the books have many purposes, but it is they talk about how you look at financial concepts, but they also talk about another key element that I think is really, really important. What we'll notice with the cover of each of the books is that each book in all the Owning the Dash books are going to represent a different family from a different background and or social structure. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I really want to make sure happens with the books is that kids, no matter what they look like or what their situation is, they feel like they can relate to the characters in the books. And as we find that these kids start to blend together and do things together, depending on where you grow up, you may not be in that kind of environment.
Sure.
I'm very grateful that where I live, my kids are growing up. They don't even know it, but they have kids from all sorts of different backgrounds that they play with. And they don't see them as, you know, identified as this or identified as that. They're just friends. And one thing, especially with special needs, with working with clients that have special needs and talking to children that have special needs, is that whether it's physical or other, is that no one wants to be labeled in that category or be treated differently for that matter. I mean, obviously you want to be cared for and as you would care for anyone, but don't. One thing, the biggest things I've always heard is that I don't want to be viewed as different from other. I want to be, you know, just part of the gang, part of the crew.
Right. Right. So no othering. That's all. No othering.
Yes. Yes.
So you just want to meet people where they are and that's it.
So one thing we'll notice as an example with Rohan and Naira is that Naira is in a wheelchair. There is not a mention anywhere in the book of her being in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. I'm not making a point of it. There's nothing. And I was really grateful to actually find out that a reviewer on NetGalley they said that I had not seen books where it's not, you know, it's there, but it's not brought up. So that meant the world to me, that I think it's really important for kids to see kids as kids or adults as adults and not feel that, because of their skin tone, their physical demeanor, whatever scenario it is, that they are different. We're all people.
Right.
So I think that's a really important lesson to teach young children and to at least try to give them that sense that we're all a big community together, which just from everything I've heard and what I will share with you. So your audience is going to hear it first. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that the last book is about judgment. And the two individuals, Akash and Mila, that will be in the book are both have Down syndrome. And all of the books actually use real families as models. So at the back of the book, you actually see the family that was represented. The book's not per se about the family. They just, I asked them to be the model. We're not going to mention anywhere in the book that they have Down syndrome. The idea is that for kids to see that these kids are among other kids, there's nothing different about them. They're great kids. They're trying things just like you're trying things. So I think that's the first big lesson I would say when it comes to just teaching kids to expand their horizons and see each other as equals and as great individuals and as capable. Naira is in Rohan and Naira, she's a leader. She's educating. She's a loving older sister. the wheelchair is irrelevant. And so that was just something that was very passionate for me. When it comes to money, I think that when we try to, one of the things I've seen just a lot of parents try to do is they want to teach their kids about investing as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And investing is helpful, but most parents, just speaking honestly, aren't very good at investing themselves. Mm-hmm. So to try to have your kids get on an app or something like that, a lot of the apps, and I'm not going to speak to any particular product, but the way that they are created is to create an emotional response when you do something. So for example, if you place a trade, you'll get a ding, like you're at a casino and you pulled the slot. Or if you make it, or maybe confetti comes down, or who knows what it is. And what that does is if you introduce that concept too young to children, they start to connect trading with an emotional, dopamine type response or whatever it might be, which is honestly, in the world of investing, the last thing you want. You want your investing to be something that is very kind of logical and boring. So if there's a big tip for parents as it relates to money with kids, don't worry so much about the investing side of things. Start focusing on those basic lessons you can teach your children. Talk about the budget. Take them to the grocery store with you and have them help you find the different groceries that are at the grocery store. One, for parents that have hoarders, like my son, Jason, he's a great kid. He loves to, any money he gets, he wants to hold on to. If you ever have to negotiate with your children about whenever you go to the gas station, they say, oh, I want that candy bar. Will you get me this or get me that? One thing I found worked incredibly well is, yes, I'll let you get it, but you have to pay for 50% of it, or you have to pay for 75%. And then all of a sudden they have some stake in the game. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when you treat them like little adults and give them ownership in their decisions, they start looking at life a whole lot differently. Mm-hmm. So I hope that helps.
I really love that. I mean, I was so enamored with the marshmallow story. And of course we have lots of stories like that throughout history, right? And I'm still, thinking about how all the conversations that flow from that about, and I can imagine, depending on the age of the child, like, well, they spent all their money. Why should I give them half of mine? Why should I help them? And thinking about that in society. Well, so-and-so didn't save their money and they're broke now. So why should I help them get food? Think about all of the adults in our lives that we hear those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Why do we have to help the homeless? They didn't help themselves. Think about those conversations that are happening. And I don't want to get too political, but those are the kinds of things that as children grow, there are lessons that you can build on over time as you start to teach them about first their own way, their own plans, their own way to save and, build wealth or just build good habits, right? And then when they look around without judgment, as you say, right? Mm-hmm. Then they can figure out where they fit into the world and with humility, how they want to interact with the world around them. So I'm just really thinking so much about everything that I've learned and everything that you've shared with me and with the audience today. So thank you so much, Tony. This has just been just a beautiful, beautiful interview today. I really appreciate it. And I haven't read all the kids' books. I did get through a good chunk of your first book. I really liked it. I thought the tools were great. Did not read the retirement book. I just didn't have enough time to get through all of your stuff. You're prolific. So looking forward to the kids' books. I will definitely share them. We're going to have a lot of information in the show notes so that people can go to your website, Owning the Dash, and we'll be able to connect with you on social media. And we will definitely be looking forward to, you've got 3 more books coming out this year. That's amazing. I don't know how you do it. You just, like you said, you don't sleep. So that's exactly how you do it.
It's starting to catch up with me. So I'll probably have to take a breather at some point. But I will just share also for your audience that on the page, there is a section for adults and for kids where there are some free downloads for games. So if parents actually want to play the Jelly Bean game with their kids, they can. Okay. If they want to print off and have their create their own little money book, own little budget book with pictures that kids can color in and identify, all of those are actually available for free on the website. So
nice.
Fun little added pieces.
We love free stuff around here. So that's great. Thank you so much for that. It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. It's wonderful.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.